Hello, everybody. Dylan Hale's back with my second pod blast of the weekend. I will probably never learn how to do an appropriate intro for these things. I will also probably never learn what an actual weekend is because it's only Thursday night, but it's WrestleMania season, so a weekend is basically whenever they start running independent wrestling shows, and they've already done a couple. I did a show earlier here on the Place to Be Nation podcast feed / network on Matt Riddle's Bloodsport event that GCW put on. And tonight I'm going to cover Evolve 102, be a similar format. We'll sort of quickly run down the card, give my overall thoughts. So Evolve 102 just ended about maybe 15, 20 minutes ago. Sort of one major story coming out of it at the end of the show with Matt Riddle winning the Evolve Championship from Zack Sabre Jr. Very big difference between this show and the Bloodsport show that kicked off the festivities in that venue there that WWE Live has all their shows coming from. Much more sparsely attended show. This show, of course, going head-to-head with the WrestleCon Super Show, which, for those who are unfamiliar, is typically one of, if not the absolute most well-attended non-WWE event of WrestleMania weekend historically. They always pack the place out, and they do so at a very high price point, so God knows what the gates for those shows are. Evolve 102 running up against that, so pretty stiff competition, I would say. That show does have Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi, the Golden Lovers, in the main event, so for a lot of fans that may have seemed like a safer bet. Having said that, this Evolve 102 lineup, on paper coming into the show, I felt may have been the most strongest top to bottom previously announced card of anything this weekend. You could maybe argue, depending on your preference for, you know, the wild and crazy freak show style matches for something like Janela Spring Break, but I did think coming in that this had an excellent chance to be the strongest top-to-bottom card. I will say, just as a brief summary on the, you know, to preface things, I don't think it lived up to that, but I do think that it was, in fact, a good show overall, despite some sort of odd hiccups along the way. The first match, the opener tonight, was Austin Theory taking on DJZ. DJZ, somebody that I'm very high on. Austin Theory, if I'm completely candid, is a guy that, you know, I mean, he's got all the look and feel of a WWE prospect. I think he's not long for the independents. I expect him to be in WWE very soon. He's young. He hasn't learned a lot of the habits on the indies that they try to coach out of people anyway at the Performance Center. So I think in some ways he's tailor-made for them. He's got the look they like. But to me, he's just a guy. Eyes glaze over when he works. I have nothing against the guy. He's definitely a prospect. I actually think there's a good chance he gets in the Performance Center and becomes a star down there. But to me, he's very much a blank slate at this point. And this match with DJZ was fine. Inoffensive little opener, but really never clicked with me. And I think it struggled a little bit also from the fact that you did not have the overwhelming sort of crowd enthusiasm and heat that you had from the Bloodsport show earlier in the day. This was a much more sparsely attended crowd, probably I would say anywhere from 40-60% less full, noticeably so too. I wouldn't say that it was a horrendous attendance, but it definitely looked to me like the walk-up for the show was nowhere near as strong as the walk-up was from Bloodsport. And there's just no reason to be dishonest about that. I could be wrong. The numbers may be different than I think, but I would guess there was somewhere in the neighborhood of 400 to 500 people in the building, and I think they'd sold almost 400 tickets in the pre-sale. So didn't look to be a ton of walk-up, and I think this match sort of was hurt from that. Nothing really exciting. Not a lot of the crazy sort of lucha spots that you ideally want of a DJZ match, but nothing that was bad either. It was suitable. It just didn't really grab me at any point. Second match on the show, Will Ospreay, AR Fox. I think this was a match a lot of people were looking forward to. Ospreay, of course, coming off a injury and really something that could have been way worse in his match with Marty Scurll at the Sakura Genesis New Japan event on April the 1st, where he did a Spanish fly off the apron and jammed his head horribly on the floor. Honestly, it could have, it's the kind of injury you look at, and if you've seen it, whether you saw the match or the GIF, you see that and you think this easily could have ended someone's career. And the guy, here he is, you know, less than a week later, wrestling. I mean, on the one hand, you want to applaud him for his commitment, and you also want to scold him for his stupidity. But I will say that this was a solid match. I think the crowd really eventually especially got into this one as they went down the stretch. Not necessarily my favorite style of match, but these guys really did work hard. You could tell that it was toned down a little bit, but I thought it actually was to the match's benefit when they did get to the big spots down the end. I think they had more effect. I thought they did a nice job changing gears and sort of accelerating the pace right at the right moment, right when they went into the stretch run, so that things like the AR Fox 450 near fall had maximum impact. That's a move that is a very impressive move athletically, but we see so many guys do it nowadays that I feel like oftentimes it doesn't command the respect it deserves. And I thought the pacing and layout of this match really made it where that spot stood out. It was an energetic match. Osprey won, which I don't think would surprise very many people. I suspect there are some people who will be very high on this match. I was merely in the camp of saying that it was good, but that's not a knock. A good match is a good match. I thought it was a pretty good performance by both men. Both men brought something to the match, added to it. Osprey being around for Evolve this weekend was a big get, and his first performance, even with that injury, which was noticeable, and his selling, he sort of sold to the injury, whether it was still hurting him or he was making that choice, I don't know, but I think it really did, in a way, kind of help the match that the pace was cut a little bit in the first half. Following that, we had the Evolve Tag Team Scramble match. It's kind of a weird match because the way the match was set up, you could only win the titles by beating the tag team champions, who of course were the Catch Point team of Chris Dickinson and Jaka, otherwise known as Doom Patrol, elsewhere on the Indies. Also in the match were the team of the End, which is Perot and Odinson, the Workhorsemen, James Drake and Anthony Henry, and the sort of other Catch Point team of Tracy Williams and Dominic Greeny. There was a spot in here where Stokely Hathaway demanded Dominic Greeny lay down so that Dickinson and Jaka could get the win, and Williams intervened, and the match sort of broke down from there into chaos. There were some good ideas and some really fun moments in this match. I personally think that this match probably suffered the most of anything on the show from a sort of not entirely invested crowd. They did come up some. When James Drake goes for that big moonsault, I think it always sort of hooks the crowd, and that was the case here. But it was not the sort of enthusiasm that you would ideally want out of this match. And then, to make matters worse, the End get the win by getting the pin on Anthony Henry. So there's no title switch, which I'm sure was confusing to some people. And honestly, I'm of the opinion that Anthony Henry should not really be taking the pin in this situation anyway. He's a guy that, if he's going to be sticking around and evolving, I hope he is. I think, you know, he needs to be heated up a little bit, and him taking a fall here, I wasn't really a big fan of. I hope that they're going to move forward with the Workhorsemen, either as a tag team or as individuals. James Drake really, really got over huge in his match with Matt Riddle at the last Evolve event in Brooklyn. So there's an opportunity for both those guys to move forward. The match itself was fine. I certainly did not think it was bad. But the sort of convoluted rules where you could only win the titles by beating the champions, and some of the structure kept it from getting into the next gear. Coming up next, this was a non-title match for the so WWE champion Keith Lee up against Darby Allin. If somebody told me this was their favorite match of the show, I would completely understand it. It was a very, very compelling sort of, cat versus mouse match. Keith Lee is so athletic that even though he's a big guy, he can sort of keep pace with a lot of the stuff that Darby Allin does without looking completely ridiculous. Darby is so reckless that you did buy his hope spots against Keith Lee because he's a guy whose entire character is predicated on the fact that he'll effectively kill himself to get even a minor advantage over his opponent. There were some crazy spots in this. Darby Allin diving backwards for a coffin drop into like a, they called it a pounce, but it was more like a shoulder tackle from Keith Lee. Darby hitting the coffin drop off the top, which is just a trust fall, backward onto Keith Lee as he was dangling on the ropes, some topes, and then the brutal bump on a spirit bomb. Keith Lee wins to no one's surprise. Darby survived for a long time, which I think in some ways was the story of the match, was just his ability to survive and put up something of a compelling and a believable fight against a guy who's way bigger than him and who he doesn't even have the athletic advantage over. It's going to be interesting to see what they do with Darby Allin going forward. I don't know what the story is here. Obviously, he climbed to the top of the mountain early this year. He had a title match against Zack Sabre Jr. that many people, I think, feel is one of, if not the best matches in Evolve so far this year. And the story since then has been kind of a story of failure for him. They did an angle afterward where he was attacked by Jarek the Great. We don't know where that's going to go. Jarek did not have a match on this card, so... You know, is this going to be a long-term story for Evolve or a hiccup along the road? It's hard to tell. Darby, you know, so much of what he does in his matches is structured around selling. In many respects, that's more of a strong point for him even than his recklessness and his high spots are. So, you know, should he ever get to the point where he's winning the Evolve title? It certainly felt like there was a point where the fans wanted it. I don't know. He strikes me as a guy who's probably better in the chase and probably doesn't need a title, but they've got to figure out, you know, how to advance things in a compelling way. And I always worry with losing streak storylines. So, you know, hopefully they don't go too far down that road, because even a guy his size who's so good at selling, I'm afraid it would feel like a big step back if they go too far with it, or if there's not some sort of method to the madness in telling that story. Up next, I think, was I'm going to go ahead and say that based on social media hype, this match was probably the most anticipated matchup of any Evolve show for the entire weekend. Daisuke Sekimoto and I'm going to butcher his name, former Battle Arts star Minoru Sawa versus Timothy Thatcher and Walter of Catchpoint, of RingConf. You know, Sawa hasn't even, I don't know if he's had any match in like several years. Sekimoto, you know, is a big Japan wrestling star and a major cult favorite. And RingConf could be the best tag team in the world. It's certainly arguable. Big-time players there in WXW. This match pretty much lived up to the hype. If you wanted to see the big chop exchanges with Walter and Sekimoto, you got it. If you wanted to see if Sawa still had it, well, he did, whether it was, you know, the high-powered strikes, the flashy grappling, all the things you expect from him. If you're familiar with him from his Battle Arts run, you got that. Got some creative and interesting selling and offense from Timothy Thatcher as well. You know, a very strong stretch run. We even got the double German spot from the Sekimoto and Sawa team, which is not a spot that I love, but I kind of enjoyed it as a one-off for the purposes of this match. I thought it worked, and it came at the right time. Match built extremely well. I think for a lot of people, this may have been their pick for the best match of the day so far. At the Pontchartrain Events Center, I believe is the name of the venue. I don't know if it would be my pick or not, but it was quite good. Notably, this was much different than the previous matches we saw earlier in the day from Thatcher and Walter. And as I noted on my earlier pod blast, I really feel like Walter is the guy that I'm going to have my closest eye on here this weekend. He's the guy that I think kind of has the most to prove. Yes, we know he's a great wrestler, but this is the first time where we're really going to see him outside the WXW element against a wide variety of opponents in a wide variety of settings. So far, we've seen him in the ropeless blood sport only knockout and submission environment versus Tom Lawler, and we've seen him in this tag team match with Timothy Thatcher against Sekimoto and Sawa, who hasn't wrestled in several years. And I think he's absolutely lived up to expectations. So at this point, you got to call Walter 2 for 2. You got to call Timothy Thatcher 2 for 2 as well. He had a great performance at Bloodsport against Nick Gage. So both of those guys are batting 1,000 so far. And then in the main event for the Evolve Championship, Zack Sabre Jr. loses the Evolve title to Matt Riddle. There was a lot of scuttlebutt behind the scenes, or I shouldn't say behind the scenes, but in the sort of hardcore fan community, that Sabre was going to have to lose the title here. And he did. And I was kind of the opinion that it was likely. Then I had sort of changed my mind and thought, I don't know, maybe Zach's going to retain. They went with the big title switch, and notably they went with it on the first show of the weekend. They didn't hold off and preserve this match for the big super show, which is coming up tomorrow night, which is sure to be the most well-attended Evolve show. I mean, that's an absolute certainty. It will be the most well-attended Evolve or WWN branded event. And they didn't do that then. They did it now, and that's interesting. Whether that's a good or bad choice, I don't know. The decision was made, though. Obviously, we've seen where a lot of these WWN talents are doing WWE Access. They've had Access matches. I think we've got the Catch Point team there tomorrow. I know we had Keith Lee wrestling Cassius Ohno there today. I believe Jason Kincaid may have been there today. There's some others. So, does that factor in to some of the booking decisions and who's winning titles or losing titles on certain shows for the Evolve brand this weekend? I don't know. It could. I certainly couldn't blame Gabe Sapolsky if it does. You got to make do. Last year, of course, they had the incident where they built certain things, and then Drew Galloway got pulled away from them at a critical moment and ended up in the crowd on TakeOver. They had to write him out of the main event on the Super Show. So you clearly don't want another situation like that again. In any event, Zack Sabre Jr.'s reign ended. I don't know exactly how long it was. Maybe almost a year, I think. He beat Timothy Thatcher in that great match in New York City. I think he had a good reign with the title, but it was also notable for sort of being the period where the WWN title was brought about, and then there was, kind of a question mark about what belt means more, or sort of a strange situation there. And to make matters even stranger, now we have a third title with the FIP title that Austin Theory holds. But this was, I thought, a very good match. It was very much a Zack Sabre Jr. match, in the sense of lots of grappling, the sort of psychology of Zack trying to take away various body parts and Riddle trying to come back and make a run. Ultimately, he did make a run. I thought his selling and the way he did timed his comebacks was actually very, very smart. Riddle's a guy who I think gets panned by certain critics, primarily because either they don't get what Riddle is trying to do, or because they want him to be a wrestler who he simply isn't. I mean, Matt Riddle is not Kiyoshi Tamura. He's not Volkan. He never was going to be. That's not why he became a professional wrestler. I think it's kind of ridiculous to try and demand he be something that he isn't. I understand why people crave that. But the reality is, Matt Riddle is the wrestler that he is. He's a super freak athlete who happens to have a legit background that he can and does rely on in critical moments. And that's exactly what you got out of this match. Zack tortured him for a large portion of the match. He went to the leg, then he went to the arm. There were some cool spots built around that. Like I said, I thought the vulnerability Riddle showed in the match was quite good. To me, it actually reminded me a lot of his performance over last WrestleMania weekend, where he had the early injury angle that they did with Drew Galloway, and then the Fred Yehi match, and then the six-way elimination for the, which led to him winning the WWN Championship, becoming the first WWN champion. Obviously, this was one match, so there's not the long-term sort of storytelling that we got there over the course of, you know, 3 days. But I thought it was similar in the sense that there was sort of, you know, the way Riddle was coming back, the way the fight was coming from underneath, the strategy and the tactics of having to deal with a guy who was as good or better than him as a grappler, who had taken away his leg and was taking away his arm, and having to rely almost purely on the raw athleticism, because he, even though he usually does have the technique, he didn't necessarily have it here. I really enjoyed it. I thought the match had a pretty good amount of depth. I did not think it was a match of the year level match, but I thought it was a very good, probably even a great match. And when Riddle won the title, it did feel like a big moment. It was probably, I would say, other than maybe moments of the the semi main event tag team match, and moments of Ospreay and AR Fox, I think was the only thing on the show that really had a huge big time WrestleMania weekend feel. And it did feel like a huge moment. The crowd exploded when he won the belt. The Lenny Leonard's call, I thought, was excellent, as he sort of, you know, was laying out how Zach had beat him previously and that Riddle had gotten trapped again, and then the drama of Lenny sort of calling around that was great. I thought it was a strong ending to the show. You do wish Riddle's now had two sort of coronation moments with WWN. Neither one was as well attended as you would like, and you do wish that he would have one that was as well attended as it probably deserved to be. But I did think it was a strong, strong match to close the show. There was definitely an atmosphere in the building there that you wish had been the case for the majority of the show, if not the entire show. But it's difficult to call a show less than stellar with the quality of wrestling that was on this card. Darby Allin versus Keith Lee was very good. The Sawa and Sekimoto versus Ringkampf tag team match was very good, if not great. The main event was very good, if not great. Nothing on the undercard was what I would call bad, or really less than average even. So to me, this was a good show. I didn't think it was a blowaway show. It probably didn't live up to the expectations, if I'm being 100% honest, that the card looked to have on paper. But sometimes expectations screw with you, and they're not always the most fair thing to go by in the first place. That's my rundown of Evolve 102. I really had no idea I would do this pod blast. I just decided to do it on a whim. Hopefully the Place to Be Nation folks will post it. I may do a couple more of these. I may even do one after the Beyond show tonight if I really get a bug up my ass, because I think I'm going to stay up and watch Lit Up. It's an interesting concept. I'm not even the biggest intergender fan, but I applaud them for at least trying to do something different on Mania Weekend. With that, I want to thank everybody for listening, and I will talk to you guys later.